Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
Well, if songs are any indication of the most important human emotions and feelings and the way they express them, well, crying is certainly up there, isn't it? Do you know, we could have put probably 100 more songs in that medley, but we don't have the time. There are so many songs about crying, but why do we do it? We're going to talk about it with Dr. Rachel Hannam, who's the director of North Brisbane Psychologists. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hi. Hi, Suzanne. Thank you very much.
And if you've got any questions that you've got about crying, or you just want to tell us about, you know, the role that crying plays, your relationship with it, I'd love to hear from you. 1-300-800-222. So, Rachel, I just said, look, I call myself a terrible crier. I cry very easily. Where do you sit on the crying scale?
Yes, I also like to have a good cry. And I've noticed as I've gotten older, I've probably become likely to cry, more susceptible to crying as I've gotten older. So, yes.
And now, do you also spark, you know, tears at something that, what makes you cry then, Rachel?
Oh, you know, being exhausted and at the end of my tether, but like you, a sad movie. I have been at public gatherings like graduations and weddings and teared up, as you explained earlier as well.
So why is crying so important to us as humans? Why do we do it, Rachel?
Well, we are the only species that has evolved to cry emotional tears, which is really fascinating. And evolutionary biologists and psychologists don't know exactly why, but there are a few really good theories about it. And it seems to be a very powerful biological tool for releasing tension and expressing deep emotion. You know, when we've reached a tipping point that floods our nervous system with stress hormones, it's a release. But it also communicates very powerfully to others. I'm struggling. Come closer. And our survival as a species has really depended on our ability to read each other's feelings accurately so that we could work together, care for one another, protect and understand one another.
So you said that we are the only people or the only species that have evolved to cry emotional tears. So presumably other species what cry the kind of tears that are cleaning out our eyes?
Yeah, so basal tears or reflex tears, which clean out our eyes if they've got, you know, irritants in them or there's an infection. And, of course, we cry those tears as well. Anyone who's chopped an onion will know that. But there's a difference between these types of tears. In emotional tears, scientists have found stress hormones as well as our body's natural painkillers, and those molecules are not found in those reflexive tears.
Wow. So a scientist could take a sample of your tears and tell whether you're crying because you'd been chopping the onions or you're crying because you were upset about something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Different chemical compounds in the tears.
Amazing. Now, can tears be contagious?
Absolutely, because all human emotions are contagious if we're tuned in with one another. So, yes, seeing somebody cry emotional tears, absolutely. Triggers something in our brain, in our mirror neurons, and we start to read and feel their emotions, and we may tear up as well. That's often when I cry, to answer your first question, is when I see other people crying, I kind of well up as well.
Dr. Rachel Hannam is here from North Brisbane Psychologists. So what is actually happening? What is the process that makes us cry? Have scientists figured out, you know, what's triggering what and how that results in tears coming out of our eyes?
Well, it's a pretty complex chemical picture, but as I said earlier, it's when we've reached a tipping point in our nervous system where our sympathetic nervous system is, which is the one that we use, you know, to in the fight-flight response, we're holding so much tension and activation, but we reach a tipping point and we have kind of an overload of emotion in our system, which is very much physiological, as you would know, as anyone knows who started to cry. And the crying actually tips us back into our parasympathetic nervous system, which is our body's mechanism for calming itself and producing the natural painkillers and, you know, recruiting other people if they're around to, you know, come and comfort us. And it helps us to get out of our heads often and stop intellectualizing and process emotionally what we're feeling. And it is an important, of course, you can be exhausted after you have a big cry, but you can also feel less tension and more calm. And so it's good. You got to cry. I always say to my clients, I apologize for crying in my office. And I say, no, this is the place. I have lots of tissues. You got to cry.
Well, people say that, don't they? Because I think we all have a sense that someone else crying makes us feel uncomfortable, because someone starts crying near me, what's wrong? How can I help you? I don't know what to say. How am I going to make them stop crying? And not all of us are comfortable being around other people's tears.
Particularly in this culture. And we find some gender differences, and we find big cross-cultural differences. There are some very expressive cultures where crying is just part of everyday life and it's acceptable, but we still have some of that British stoicism.
Mm. So what's an example of a culture where crying is very much de rigueur?
I've met people from Latino cultures and Mediterranean cultures for whom crying is no big deal. There's no shame in crying. It's just part of the range of human coping mechanisms and expressions. On the other end, I've had a client who lived in Tokyo for a few years, and she had a breakup and she was on a bus, and she told me that she started to cry on this bus and people moved away from her. So rather than, and I've got an Indian friend who said, oh gosh, if that was India, there'd be women coming up to her saying, are you okay? How can I help you? And people started to move away from her. So really interesting cross-cultural differences.
Isn't that, because I think in our culture, if you saw someone crying, you wouldn't want to leave them alone. Even if you didn't know that person, you might feel like you should go up and say, are you okay? What's wrong?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Australia is somewhere in the middle, and we are a multicultural sort of culture, aren't we, in society. So, yeah, I think there would be someone who might come up to you on that bus and just say, you okay, love, you know, do you need anything? But apparently not in Japan, according to my client. In Japan, I imagine it's like something very private. You wouldn't do it in public, whereas in other cultures, you know, it's no problem.
It's funny. I've been to Japan a few times. I actually have an incredibly strong memory from being there maybe 15 years ago and seeing a woman sobbing, like just relentlessly, very openly, as she walked across this bridge that I was crossing in the other direction. And I've never forgotten that. And I remember thinking, why? I wonder what has happened in her life that she's crying just so dramatically almost.
Good on her. Streets. What a rebel for her culture.
Yes. Yeah. Well, no one else was going up and talking to her, that's for sure. I've got Dr. Rachel Hannam here, Clinical Director of North Brisbane Psychologists, and plenty of people contributing with their own experiences or questions on the SMS. So we might start getting onto some of those. Ryan just said, has anyone cried as much as I have since the Oasis reunion?
Tears of joy. Yes, we can be overwhelmed by joy as well.
Yeah. John says, bagpipes make me cry.
Ah, wow. Yes. Yeah, associations. You know, so often we have associations with music and smells and things that bring back memories that are emotional. Yeah. Mm.
And a couple of other people actually talking about music. Debbie says, why do songs in a minor key trigger emotional tears? It happens often. When I hear the Hatikva, not something I'm familiar with. Oh, the Israeli national anthem. I always cry, says Debbie. Which is a bit like me in the Australian national anthem, having a cry at that. So is there some, you know, is there particular music that is more likely to make us cry, particular chords?
Oh yeah. I mean, we all know kind of the difference between the minor and major key. And for some reason, I wish I knew the answer. I'm going to have to go and Google it after this. But the songs in the minor keys can make us just seem to have a more impact on our emotionality. But music and emotion is so subjective, because a song that makes me cry might irritate somebody else and vice versa. But music lights up so many parts of our brain and, you know, has such a strong impact on our emotions. And it's such a good way to get in touch. Sometimes people say, I want to have a good cry. Well, try and make a little playlist of your crying songs that you know will maybe get you there, because it's good to have that.
Okay, Ali's given us a call from the Mid-North Coast. Hello, Ali.
Hello, Suzanne.
You're going to join the crying club, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, it's a good one to be in, I reckon. It's so natural and, yeah.
So tell us about you. What does it take to get you to cry?
Nothing. No special situation. Like, if you're present and in the moment, it's just all day on off. It's just like free flowing like salt, and tears are salty, right?
So can you give us an example, Ali? What's a recent moment that sparked some tears?
Well, I'm really moved by everything in nature and movement in nature, like what birds do and how they pick up on my emotions. I pick up on their. I watch and feel their, you know, energy around, and that's just one example every day. And if birds could laugh, I'm sure they do. But they also do that, this little ooh, that sound that sounds like they, if they can see that I am sad, because that's part of him being human too, that their tone literally changes. So it's just everywhere and in everything. It's like love, you know?
So, Ali, is it sort of one tear, or your eyes feel a bit like you've teared up, or do you actually cry a little bit, you know, a bit more at these moments?
Well, I just don't measure it at all. So I'm so ready and in the moment and present that I don't analyze it, and, you know, wherever I am. And because if you block it, that becomes something else. I think that's where frustration and anger and all of those other negative emotions creep in, if you're blocking what is so, it's, you know, so such, you're gifted with the joy of, or the being in the moment is sort of like, that's really good for everyone.
Wonderful.
It's non-harmful. Yeah. It's just... Yeah.
Very interesting to hear that. Thank you, Ali. I mean, I think I'm going to put Ali up the top of the tree for crying. But Rachel, what are your reflections on what Ali had to tell us?
I wonder if Ali's still on the line. I just wonder if that's changed over time and if you're crying more as you're getting older, Ali.
No, I've always cried easily.
Always.
But
yeah.
It's about how it's you know, as a child or going through the stages of, you know, of all of that. I think we are affected by how others feel about it, you know. But when I'm just a confessed, free,
highly sensitive,
free-wheeling,
loving,
cry.
Yeah,
okay.
Wonderful.
Once you realise that it's a, because you cry, beauty will make you cry. But that.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ali. Mm. Now, someone, because you were saying to us, Rachel, that, you know, your nervous system gets to a point, maybe you're stressed and you can see those stress hormones are actually coming out in the tears, and that will sometimes lead to tears. And someone's sort of saying, well, hang on, is that suggesting that if you're actually very calm and not on edge, that you're less likely to cry?
Well, it's a complex thing. You know, listening to Ali speak just now made me remember that, you know, personality and temperament come into this a lot. Some people are higher on emotionality and what we used to call neuroticism. So we're just more sensitive, maybe more sensitive to perceived threats, but also maybe more sensitive to beauty and feelings of joy and love. So there's the personality factor. Some people are naturally more calm personalities, some people more anxious, and all of that plays into it as well. But yeah, crying normally is a release. So I can't imagine too many situations where you're feeling very calm and sobbing. Normally the calm comes after the sobbing. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it's very, very, very interesting. All right, Greg from Ride. Hello.
Good day, Suzanne. Hello, Rachel.
Hello.
I watch NBC News on the internet. It's a 24-hour streaming service, and they have a crime program called Dateline, and they cover the murder, the discovery of the body, the police action, court case, and I was watching it, and tears are streaming down my face. How about that?
Is that unusual for you, Greg?
Yes, I don't normally cry, no.
Oh, Okay. So was it just one episode in particular that had this happening?
Yes, yes. It was a young person who was missing, and they feared the worst, and they eventually tracked her down, and the parents had to come and climb the body and bury it and mourn. And then they showed the court case and the guilty person, you know, been given life in prison with no parole. And it's just so sad.
Yeah. So what's your theory, Greg, about why you cried on this occasion when you don't normally?
Well, both my parents have passed, and I have no contact with my older sister and younger brother. And possibly the graphical nature of the program is making me realise how alone I am.
Mm. Did you feel better after the cry?
Oh, yes. Crying and laughter are the same release.
Yeah. They often are, aren't they?
Yeah, they can be.
Mm. So, Rachel, what is happening actually when we laugh until we cry? I mean, I haven't experienced it that often where you laugh so hard that you literally start crying. But it certainly happened a couple of times. What's
it's
happening
wonderful.
There? Yes.
I love that when that happens. Well, you know, as your last caller said, it's a release, and laughter and crying are both the way that our body, one way or two ways that our bodies can release physical tension in a non-verbal way. You know, when words escape us and we need another way to express the emotions, then, and if we laugh hard enough, we will spark our eyes to cry. And I'm not sure if there's stress hormones in those tears or not. I'll have to look into it. But both are a form of release. And, you know, non-verbal evolved mechanism that, and again, humans seem to be the only species who've got the ability to feel amusement and laugh.
Hello, Shelley.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Suzanne.
Tell us about your relationship with crying.
Yeah, I'm not, it's really weird, and I've always had this since I was a child. I don't cry at the normal things that make people cry. So, for example, you know, when my grandfather died and my dad died, I didn't cry. And when people are being mean to me, I don't cry. But I get this uncontrollable crying when someone's being kind to me, or if I see those ads at Christmas, you know, the orphans and the homeless and people are helping them, I just start crying. And I don't understand why.
Okay, Rachel, can you shed any light on what's going on with Shelley?
Yeah, I mean, the thing I love about human beings, and in this way, tears and crying, is it's a bit of a mystery. What we find poignant, what touches us, what softens us, you know, obviously, that they're the things that soften you for some reason. And if we were having a session, we could look into your, you know, your story and see if there's reasons we could make sense of why those things touch you in a way that just softens you and opens you up. And different people find different things poignant, but I can certainly relate to what you're saying.
Mm. So when was the last time it happened, Shelley?
It's always at Christmas time.
Mm.
I when I see those ads about, you know, where they say donate, or and then they show, less fortunate people, or particularly children, orphans, and they say donate gifts, and, you know, I have uncontrollable crying.
Wow.
But then normal things that should make me cry don't.
That's interesting that you say that, Shelley. I mean, Rachel, we have an idea, don't we, of what it's acceptable to cry about. And I think that's why I feel really weird about the fact that I tear up at the national anthem. I think that's weird. If I'm crying because I'm at a funeral and someone's died or something sad has happened, I'm like, these tears are allowed. Whereas I think, you know, when I'm crying for something, it seems very minor or inexplicable. That's why I feel a bit embarrassed about those ones.
Well, different things will open your heart. For some reason, that opens your heart when Shelley sees those ads. You know, there's something that is both vulnerable and that, you know, triggers our empathy in a way that we get in touch with something that's bigger than our own lives or bigger than ourselves. And we have no words for it. And tears are great when we have have no words for that emotion that's in us. Yeah.
Thanks, Shelley. Now, I am intrigued because there are those people who seem unable to cry. You know, terrible things happen, no tears flow, and you think, what's happening? And I've spoken to people who feel that and they feel really frustrated. Like, why is it that I can't cry? Have you got any insights into what's going on, which makes some people seemingly much more open to crying and some people don't seem to be able to do it easily?
Yeah, well, I think personality comes into it. We do know that there are feeling personality types and more logical thinking personality types. There's all sorts of theories. You know, we've interbred 50,000 years ago with Neanderthals, and Neanderthal brains were more logical and organized and technical, and, you know, Homo sapien brains were more social and, dependent on reading each other's emotions. And we are this blend, if you do a deep dive into evolutionary history, of different genetic influences. So there's all of that personality stuff. But another big factor is our early conditioning. Some of us grew up in families where tears were not allowed, sadness was not allowed, anger was not allowed, fear was not allowed. And that conditioning becomes, you know, profoundly embodied and patterned into our brains and bodies over time. So I've worked with clients and it took them years of therapy before they were able to give themselves permission and break through some of the shame or the fear that stopped them from crying. And they were very pleased when they could finally start to feel their feelings, cry tears, and then had grief that they couldn't do it earlier. But grieving is such an important part of our human nature. You know, the Queen said there is no grief without love. And we celebrate and we need to mourn.
Do we need to cry to do that properly? How important is crying in that process?
Well, I would never want to make a blanket statement and say, you know, you have to cry. It does seem to be a thing that most people, we're born crying, you know. Babies cry and it's a sign that they're healthy, that they're breathing, and it's the beginning of the attachment process. Crying is only one strategy for expression and one strategy to elicit and recruit support from others, but it does seem to be a powerful one. So if people find that they can never cry and haven't cried for years and years, then it might be something for them to reflect upon and go and talk to someone about, especially if they're curious or would like to have a good cry, but also accept that we're all different. Some people are like you, Suzanne. Some people are not.
No problem with me for crying. No, it's the other way. Dr. Rachel Hannam is here, the clinical director of North Brisbane Psychologist. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Hi. Tell us about your relationship with crying, particularly with music, because you're a musician.
Like learning a song, like sometimes I'd have to sit there and if I wanted to perform it on stage, it'd take me about 30 or 40 times to rehearse it before I couldn't cry anymore, because it just tears your heart out. There's a few songs that have done that.
What's an example? Is there a song, is it your own, or are there some well-known ones that have done that to you?
The first one that comes to my mind was Dolly Parton one. What is it? The Hills Were Wildflowers. The hills were alive with wildflowers.
I'm not familiar with it, but yeah, wow, Jeff, that's So you've just accepted you're going to have to cry a lot at certain songs before you can perform them.
Oh yeah, oh for sure. I think you must live them. It gets worse as you get older. Like I can go to a funeral of someone I don't know and I'll end up crying because I think it's just emotion and everything, you just pick up on it.
Yeah. So Jeff, this happens in other, you cry easily in other parts of your life too?
Oh, in a good movie or something. Yeah. Like it doesn't matter whether it's a sad movie or a really happy movie. Yeah. You sit there, oh God, I'm crying. Yeah. I don't know. It can't help it.
Oh, well, look, it sounds like you've got to a point where you're able to accept and enjoy. This one from Maggie. When a very close relative died, I was unable to cry. I was told it was due to being on an antidepressant for some years, which has been a great help in my life. Is this actually true, says Maggie. Rachel, can you offer any insights there?
Yeah, it's quite common that our patients report to us that once they go on an antidepressant, their emotional life becomes muffled. And that's, you know, obviously good in many ways. Antidepressants can be like a shock absorber on the car and, you know, help bring the anxiety down and lift up the low mood, the depression. But many people report that it is harder to feel their feelings and that it is harder to cry, and they become a bit desensitized. You know, what your last caller was talking about was being very sensitive and sensitized and needing to play the piece 30 times to get a little bit of desensitization. And antidepressants can have a similar effect of desensitizing us to emotion. And that's sort of the package deal. We sort of have all the feelings, or they all get a little bit muffled. And some people choose the benefits over that side effect. But other people I've worked with say, I want to feel my feelings more fully again, and I'm going to go off it, because they don't think that side effect outweighs the benefits. And, you know, we've each got to decide for ourselves. But that is very common.
Now, this is an anonymous texter who says, I'm a good crier, happy, sad, and all in between. But for over 30 years, I was a first responder to many horrific crimes. I and my colleagues had to be strong for the victims, even though we just wanted to crumble. Yes, there were times when we cried with them, but mostly not. Our tears came later, but I seemed to compensate by crying at many other times, sad news events, moving music for and with friends, and even once at a toilet paper advertisement featuring a puppy.
Oh, I relate to that.
Yeah. Now this texter is saying, you know, and I wonder how appropriate, I mean, there are moments, obviously, this texter is saying we did cry with some of the people that we were dealing with, but I have always had a feeling that it's not professional to cry. And I know, I remember Sex and the City having an episode exploring that idea. But I mean, I've had moments, you know, I didn't get jobs and I've wanted to be having a mature, dignified conversation with the person who didn't give me the job to find out why. And instead I have blubbered, you know, the snot's coming out of my nose, and I'm thinking, I do not want to be. I feel so undignified, you know. And are there techniques that you can use when you're a crier who finds yourself in one of these positions, you know, well, to stop it?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, first of all, we need to kind of think, have I done anything wrong? Does it really matter? Because, you know, I think for me anyway, as I've gotten older, I've become less ashamed at my own tears. So I think it's okay to cry when someone gives you a very disappointing piece of news. But if you are in a situation, and obviously there's times where it's appropriate to you know, muffle your tears and maybe save them up for later. And the best technique is to look up. So I know that I've been in movies and I've got really good eye makeup on, and I don't want to cry and ruin my eye makeup. So you face forward, but you look up. It's very difficult to cry when your eyes are pointing up and your face is facing forward. And sometimes we want to stifle those tears because it's, you know, appropriate for one reason or another. Other people tell me they dig their fingernails into their, you know, hands, or they scrunch their toes, or they try to put the tension into some other part of their body. It's fine to want to stifle those tears, but it's also fine to let them come later on as well. In fact, it's important to do so when you've got the chance.
Yeah, if only I felt I could control the timing. Now, the other question I do want to ask before I let you go, Rachel, is because what I've noticed is my father is very quick to tears. I am very quick to tears. Now I see my son is the same as me. And I've been thinking, is there a crying gene that makes some of us able to cry more easily than others?
That's really interesting that you share that, because women tend to be bigger criers. We are more emotional, and partly that's social conditioning and also hormonal. But at your dad and your son, I would say that comes down to personality factors, heightened sensitivity. They're highly sensitive people. And what a superpower, and sometimes a liability, depending on the situation. I would put that down to combination of genetics as well as social learning within the family system. But, you know, it doesn't sound like a problem. Do you think it's a problem?
Oh, well, as I said, when all of them end up in the kind of situation I was just describing, or you're just trying to sing a song and you can't actually get through it. I mean, I certainly wish I had better control. But thank you so much, Rachel. It's been great to talk to you. And obviously so many people on the text and on the phones actually really, you know, are crying a lot and having thoughts about it.
Great topic. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much. That's Dr. Rachel Hannam, who's the Clinical Director of North Brisbane Psychologist.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.